Welcome to yet another episode of EVA India Insights podcast series, celebrating remarkable women. I'm Sonu Iyer, partner and executive sponsor of Diversity, Equity, Inclusiveness at EY India. In our podcast today, it is really, really my privilege and honor to host Radha Basu, founder and CEO of iMerit. iMerit is a global technology-led, gender-diverse AI solutions company. iMerit is a market leader in data enrichment and annotation services. But we'll find out more about iMerit when we talk to Radha. Before iMerit, Radha grew Hewlett-Packard's electronic software division to a $1.2 billion business in India. She was also the chairman and CEO of Support.com, which she led to an IPO on the NASDAQ. So truly remarkable woman to feature in our podcast series today. Beyond her work in the corporate world, Radha is also recognized for her efforts to promote diversity and inclusion in the tech industry. She has been a strong advocate of gender equality and has actively supported initiatives to increase the representation of women in tech. Radha and her husband also co-founded Anudeep Foundation, a nonprofit to democratize IT training and employment for under-resourced youth and women. So stay tuned to listen in to Radha's remarkable journey of innovation, inclusion, and impact. Radha, welcome to EY India Insights podcast series.
Thank you, Sonu. Delighted to be speaking with you.
Okay, let's get started. Radha, please share with our listeners what really sparked the idea of iMerit and how have you seen this impact unfold in the tech industry?
Yes, so let me go back a few years. More than a few years, there was a time, and most people today don't realize it, that there was no IT in India. And at that time, nobody believed in the late 1980s that IT could be done in India, technology could happen in India. And what the IT industry has done in terms of it sparked India's economic revolution, and it has become an industry that has absolutely changed the face of India. But one of the things, and I was very involved with that, Sonu, as you know, because I started Hewlett-Packard in India as one of the first, international companies, tech companies, to set up a software center in a very sleepy place called Bangalore in the late 1980s. I go back to that because what that revolution did created such a wonderful middle class and affected a lot of young people in the metros, but it also left behind young people from underserved, under-resourced backgrounds, young women and youth and young women. So we looked at it and said, how do we bring wealth creation to these? It's just there are a few hundred million young people that have. And we did a very comprehensive study in looking at how people can and what digital jobs can do and create the creation of digital jobs for young people from under-resourced and underserved backgrounds. I was also very fortunate at that time. And that, by the way, was the genesis of the Anudeep Foundation. I had taken a company public on NASDAQ. And it sold the enterprise software portion of that company. My husband is at Cisco, and we both decided that we would do this. Fast forward a bit, I also had the opportunity, great opportunity, to work with Pierre Omidyar, founder of eBay, and had a great conversation with him about the future of work. What will work look like in the future? And the next step was to show how this could be done in the workplace and how digital jobs can change the face of young people who are from these under-resourced backgrounds. And that was the genesis of iMerit, very unique for-profit technology, entrepreneurship, and Impact Enterprise, but for profit. And we were very fortunate to get a ringside seat of AI. If you look forward, it was just that we happened to be at the time when AI started to really unfold. And that was what created iMerit. We actually started with 38 people 10 years ago. We celebrated our 10th anniversary, and I'll talk more about it later, but that was the creation of iMerit. How do you create a global technology company that has an inclusive workforce? That is the fundamental DNA and belief of iMerit. And how do you bring more and more people into the workforce and trust in the potential of these young people?
Yes, and a great story. And I was just thinking, in as you were talking about, you know, decades ago, the sleepy town of Bangalore, no longer sleepy. The fact that you were at the cusp of the AI revolution, you know, the fact of creating a unique entrepreneurial venture, which is for profit, yet so impactful and conscious of its social purpose and mission. Many congratulations to you and your husband for thinking through this.
Thank you, Sonu.
Radha, when I look at, and I did my reading about iMerit in preparation for this podcast, I see what stands out in about iMerit is how inclusive an organization it is. Almost 80% of employees coming from marginalized backgrounds. And then if you look at it from another measure, 52% of the workforce is women. So you obviously got your mojo right, some mantra, some strategy, or maybe multiple strategies that you deployed in creating and achieving the outcome that you are at today at iMerit. So could you share some of those strategies that you very successfully used to create such a successful business and yet stayed on course with your vision and mission and purpose of the organization?
Yes, so this is from day one. I would say that you will hear, if you go around and talk to people at iMerit, and they're young people, right? The average age of the company is 24.8. You would never know that looking at me, Sonu, but it's 24.8. But the people have, if you ask them, what is the guiding principle? What's at the core of iMerit? We don't talk in terms of guiding principles. What's at the core of iMerit? It's this mantra, which is 2 feet planted firmly on the ground. One is to be maniacally focused on clients, building the business. We're as competitive in AI globally as you'd want to be. The client's success, but a maniacal focus on clients. The other, equally important, to be able to build this global business with an inclusive workforce. And that, and tie the two together through technology, very strong investment in technology, in technology platforms, products, yes, et cetera. That is, if they did a caricature of me at iMerit, and by the way, young people do all kinds of things, the caricature has these 2 feet planted firmly on the ground and linked together by technology. So that is the, if you want to call it, the core of iMerit. It's the fabric, fiber of the company from day one. We don't ask ourselves, you know, how do we do diversity? How do we do inclusion? It is built into the DNA of the company. It's on decisions made every day. People don't ask the question, which leg is more important? It is the fact that success in business drives inclusion. Inclusion of an inclusive workforce drives success in business. And let me explain why. Because the first one is clear. Second one, not so clear. We have among the highest retention in tech, it is at 92%. Where will you find a tech company, Sonu, that's at less than 10% attrition, and all through the great resignation and COVID and everything? And with women, it is even lower. The second, another point I want to say is you have to approach this, or I I don't like to be prescriptive. We approached it with also saying, how do we have an inclusive employee base that participates in the equity of the company? So when I founded the company and Pyramedia and I were the seed investors, we put 26% equity, 26% of my equity into a trust, which means the shares were in a trust for the inclusive employee base who had never participated in anything called equity. And interestingly, when we did our B round, we did a small secondary. It wasn't the CEOs, founders, or CTOs, or management team that got the secondary. That first part of that secondary went into that trust where the shares were exchanged for cash. So recognizing that value and making them part of the inclusion is really important. And for us, I know this sounds very much like apple pie and motherhood, as we would say here, but that equality and a mutual respect. It's a very interesting company. I've worked for, you know, Hewlett Packard. I've worked at, of course, SportsOpt Culture and iMerit. There is an equality and a lack of hierarchy. That's very interesting. So I will receive G-chats. I receive many G-chats from people, and people don't send it to me as I'm the CEO. They call me D, which is, you know, in India, it's kind of like older sister. I'm Tamil, and, you know, for me, like, it's the equivalent of Akka. So D. And I'll give you one one thing that touched me deeply, one anecdote that shows you the equality and mutual respect. It was a young lady who came from the impact background, who had become a team lead and had grown very well in autonomous vehicles and autonomous mobility and LiDAR work and stuff. Anyway, she got married and then amazingly came back. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the programs we put in for women to come back to work after they're married, after they have children, and things like that. And then she was going to have a child. And I was very excited for her. Thought she would let me know after that. She sent me a G-chat from the delivery room. And she said, Dee, here's a picture of my precious baby. And my mother and you are the two people who are seeing this for the first time. I was so touched. And it is not because there is a culture that's built in to be able to say this and do this. It is the respect, the mutual respect and equality, and treating people based on their ability, not on their pedigrees and degrees. I would say that that is an essential part of our culture. For me, it is this connection with the people that is the most precious.
Thank you, Radha. I think wonderful tips for those interested. The fact of reward, recognition, making employees part of your equity base, you know, having that culture of mutual respect, lack of hierarchy. And I think the story, the anecdote that you shared really, really, you know, kind of manifests the culture of the organization. So you're truly walking the talk and truly the Akka or the D, as you would call it, from an India standpoint. Very impressive. Radha, I want to now, you know, you've touched on this fact about, 52% of the workforce being women. And which we know is unusual. And you talked about another statistic in terms of the attrition being less than 10% when it comes to women in your organization. So what are some of the, you know, things that you're doing to drive innovation and growth specifically for women in iMerit and particularly in tech-related roles? You know, if you could share some of those specific initiatives that have helped women in iMerit thrive, succeed and grow and stay, of course, in the organization.
Sure. If you're okay, let me start a little bit about giving the larger context of the inclusive workforce, and then I will go into the women. So it's a very much a mission and growth pathways are there. So we have about just under 5,000 employees, a little over 5,000 employees. The iMeritors globally, we call them iMeritors. This is global because we have 10 centers globally. Eight of them are in India, one in Bhutan, and one in New Orleans in the U.S., and, you know, just getting to be another one more center as well, a team of people in the U.S. and Pittsburgh. So 52% are women, 70%, as you talked about, almost, it's now been as high as 80%, are from Tier 2, Tier 3 towns in India and the U.S., creating a workforce which is very authentic, grounded, and inclusive, and eager to learn. So when we look at that, and then you asked about the question about women. So people ask me all the time, wow, that is really unique and unusual. How could you ever have a 50-50 company in tech? I have a pretty simple answer. Have you seen the world lately? It's kind of 50-50. Why wouldn't the tech industry reflect that? Why wouldn't it reflect it and have 50% women from day one? Why wouldn't you plan for it? Frankly, that's the way I look at it. I'm pretty forceful about it. To me, it's like, okay, the world's 50-50. Tech companies can be 50-50. I ask the question, why can it not be? So inclusivity for us isn't just a concept. It's a fundamental aspect of crafting responsible AI solutions that address global challenges. And in the case, let me give you a couple of things we've done with women. I'll give you one example of one center we have. That's an all-women center. In a place, and that's the only one, in a place called Metia Bruce, which is in the eastern part of India, about 2 hours from Calcutta. And that center, when we first went in there, through Anudeep, was basically to work with young women to just give them some skilling so they could go to jobs. They could not leave Metia Bruce, the community, and go to a job that was an hour away. So we said, let's bring jobs there. This was in the early stages. Remember now, we're 10 years old, right? And we brought some digital jobs, found the women very eager to learn and very, very good. And then got into computer vision working with Microsoft as a client. And they came in, they said, well, we'll train you on this new set of stuff called computer vision. And we found that these women were brilliant at it. And there's even a study run by Tata Institute of Social Sciences as to why is it that they became a global center of excellence in computer vision. And not that we're calling them a global center of excellence, but they are certified as a global center of excellence in computer vision and do some of the most advanced work in multi-sensor fusion, 3D LiDAR, training surgical robots. You can name a number of different things, and they are working on it in the computer vision space. And this, one of the things that we had to do there, we had to work in the community. So a thing that's important because of the communities we're in, it is really important for us to recognize how to work in the community and to create very safe and very acceptable workplace where the women can come in. Otherwise, they weren't allowed to work. I'll share with you one a fun anecdote, yeah? We can talk very seriously here, but there's a lot of fun working in this company. So as the young ladies got older, you know, many of them have been with us for 8-9 years. In fact, I wanted to share with you one of the touching things at the 10th anniversary for me was there were 174 175 people in the first year of the company. We gave 10-year sashes and rewards and recognition to 142 people, one of them being me. That many people were still in the company of the initial lot who'd worked with us. Many of them women, more than 50%, I think 60% were women. So naturally now they're getting married, they're having children, et cetera. And you know, in India, one of the most difficult things is after women get married, for them to come back into a full-time job, into a very, very empowered job. They're earning somewhere between 5 to 15x their family income. So all of these have a play. So we had a whole set of techniques, I mean, and we used technology and stuff and to be able to see how they could work from home and, you know, not have 4 months off to be able to become part of the family and things like that. But anyway, one of the things we instituted when that started to get good is a mother-in-law day. And I know that you would laugh at this, but you know, it's really important when the young lady goes into the home and the mother-in-law is the person she interacts with the best, and her earning income makes the mother-in-law empowered. And so they want to see what's going on at work. So we had a mother and mother-in-law's day. It's one of the most popular things in the company. In fact, we've had many men say, why can't I bring, it's like bringing your daughter to work, bring your mother or mother-in-law to work. So we gave and we provided the benefits of extending up to 6 months of maternity leave. And the amazing thing is, within 2 months after work, people come back. And we've had very, very high return now. And the same thing is true when they have children. And being able to work, especially during COVID lockdown support, there was not one day, 1 hour at which the pay did not show up at the bank at the right time. We facilitated and brought broadband connections into communities that didn't have broadband. iMerit women were fixing workstations. We trained them on just setting up their workstations and being sysadmins and setting them up near their kitchen to manage the flexible working hours. So a variety of different things that we did, upskilling, skilling, and creation of the academy. And I'll mention the Gen AI Academy is at the heart of what we are doing today to upskill. It's a continuous upskilling and upleveling. All of these come together means, what does it mean? They think of iMerit as a long-term career. It changes their lives. The thing you will hear the most from the young ladies is, I have a voice. I have a voice. To me, that is the most empowering. I have a voice. It impacts their families, their communities, and in a broader sense, makes them part of a global workforce. I got very passionate and made it a very long answer. So please bear with me.
I love the passion. And I'm also completely, completely aligned on that one. And, you know, I have a voice. It's so simple, yet so powerful. So, and you know, thanks for talking about the mother-in-law day and how empowering it is, both for mothers and mothers-in-law who are supporting women to stay on course in their careers. So I think great stories there. And I hope this message goes out loud and clear. I know we've been kind of drumming the tables and talking about the fact that demographically 50% of the world's population is women, yet we are nowhere close to seeing that reflected in our workplaces. And, you know, the statistic that always gets my blood pressure go up is the one that World Economic Forum puts out about the number of years it will take for the gender gap to close. The latest one, the 2023 World Economic Forum, if I recall correctly, said 131 years of it would take for the gender gap to close if we continue to do things at this pace.
So it but is, that's it, you know, right? So no, we cannot continue to do it at this phase, right? Absolutely.
And,
You're right.
And it's entrepreneurs like you that are making the difference. You know, thank you for
that. I tell you, it's the women. It's all of our people in the company who are making the difference. If you see how sassy, how on top of things they are, continuous learning. I'll tell you another thing, Sanu. Yes, they put out statistics and things. And I'm a big fighter of this. I'm a fighter to say that we cannot talk about needing even, and I'm sorry to say this because I know your role, but even saying that we need a diversity officer, we need to focus on equity. I believe companies should be designed to be 50-50, to be inclusive, because that is the best way. If we didn't do that, you would not get cell phones out to everybody everywhere. It's ubiquitous, right? We want AI to be ubiquitous. And the only way AI is going to be ubiquitous is if we have AI applications that are in societal applications, if the people working in AI are equal, there is gender equity, and there are young people from all kinds of backgrounds. So it's got to be the people who are working in it, the people it impacts, and the applications it impacts. All of these things make for inclusive and responsible AI. And that is how AI is going to become ubiquitous. And so to me, it makes the best business sense. And sometimes I'm like, if you can have retention at 92% or 90%, and with it, that's one of the things that every tech CEO talks about is, how do I retain my people? Well, this is one of the ways.
Rather, I think you would be reading my mind if it's possible sitting such a long distance away. But I was going to kind of, get into AI. So this is a nice segue. You already started to talk about artificial intelligence. So my question really, you know, as a trendsetter, as someone who saw it coming many years ago, so how do you see AI shaping up, or the whole machine learning shaping the landscape, A, from a particular focus that you have on employability of youth? Because every time people have spoken about AI, they've talked about disruption and people losing jobs. So how's that going to change that whole employability landscape, and any other, you know, trends in tech industry that you want to share? I'd love to hear that.
I think this is a very important, not just a question, it is a strategy that has to be, that needs to be worked on, or is being worked on, in terms of how does this AI and machine learning shaping the landscape? First of all, I think the use cases or the applications of AI are all in all segments of society, from farms to space to border roads to trust and safety to healthcare to land rights, just a variety, climate change, big ones, and job creation. There are, you know, usually when in the early stage of technologies, which AI is, as much as everybody talks about it, especially of Gen AI, it's just at the beginning of touching corporate and enterprise AI is just starting up. And as I had said earlier, AI is, use cases are all these segments. So for example, AI and precision agriculture. You know, we work with clients who are very much in the forefront of precision agriculture, and we're training sensors and algorithms and models to be able to look at when there's a small area of crop, when there is we can detect some sort of disease with the crop, and it's at a very small area, before it spreads into a larger field, you have caught the problem early on and you've really saved the field. So this becomes really important in food security and areas like that. So I'm just giving that as an example. And I'll talk more about it. So my point is that the use cases is in all segments of society. That means what? Everyone uses, or it has the potential to use and create the data and the technology to be able to apply it to these applications. It requires an important push on 21st century skill sets. What are they? Critical thinking, curiosity, learning, logical reasoning, and a lot of domain specialization and personalization. So those who can translate a domain problem to an AI problem and solution can do very well. What is AI? You're learning by example. It's not like software coding. You're learning by example. You have machines learning by examples. And the fusion of the robotic intelligence and the human intelligence is what causes AI to be actually in production and working. So, first of all, I will agree with your statement and your question. It is changing jobs. Definitely, there will be jobs that will go away that are already going away. But they're creating new jobs as well. This whole prompt response, prompt engineering. If a person has the ability to be able to prompt and see the response and provide the feedback into the intelligent robot or into the AI model, and then be able to use the, it's called reinforced learning through human feedback. It's just RLHF, you know, we're techie nerds. I'm a nerd myself, I'm an engineer, and so we use all these terms. But that is what it is. So to me, talking about the future of AI jobs in India, the trifecta of technology, the talent, and the technique is really critical in getting AI into production and into a large-scale business. While technology is essential, the transformative power lies with the human feedback. You just think about it. We talk about hallucination I live and breathe Gen AI, so I will use some of those examples. Hallucination. Well, yeah, the darn model hallucinates because it's so confused. But it is the power of the human intelligence and the talent pool, the specialists, the experts, who can actually translate that technology into tangible outcomes. So for me, it is these new jobs being created, and the beauty of it is it does not necessarily need, of course, data scientists would be, you know, IIT grads, people like that. There are degrees and pedigrees, but a large amount of the jobs do not need just very, very small group of people in the metros who've been to the highest institutions. We can take them from a large, diverse pool, and we can skill them in AI to be able to create these kinds of jobs. And I think the future of AI jobs in India, it extends beyond the confines of very great elite institutions. It embraces generalists trained in various verticals and domains who can navigate the complex intersections of technologies like computer vision, natural language processing, audio AI, and Gen AI. We run a Gen AI academy, and we have more than 1,200 people who've been through it. And they are emerging as, you know, some of them at the lower level, some of them at the middle level, some at the higher level. So we have a pyramid of generalists, analysts, specialists, and experts. And they're emerging with those skills. So I think I'm so excited about the kinds of jobs that AI can create in India. and about the domain specialization and the personalization and how we can apply AI into societal applications. So I think it requires a lot of work, Sonu, because it requires a lot of skilling, a lot of understanding of what talent is needed, and not having blinders in terms of degrees and pedigrees, and being able to make it a sort of a more inclusive workforce. So I really think, during pandemic, we created over 2,000 jobs during those years of the pandemic. So I'm very excited about this.
Wow. Very, very inspirational. And I think maybe a lot of rethinking for people who think that this is just a disruptor. I think the promise of opportunity seems much larger. Yeah. And then, of course, people have to reskill and upskill and do the right thing to leverage the opportunity AI is going to create or is already creating. Radha, I know I'm conscious of time. I have you for some time. Maybe a couple more questions.
Yeah, you know. Sure. I wanted to say one more thing, Sonu, that I was at Stanford AI Enclave about 2 weeks ago, and it was just really interesting to listen to. There were venture capitalists, of course, the tech company CEOs and CXOs, and it was an enclave. It wasn't a huge conference. It was a very nice dialogue, and it talked about, there were many panels, like AI in healthcare, about the inclusivity of AI in healthcare and how you can use it for different things. And as we were listening to practitioners and technologists and services companies and venture capitalists and professors, it just really came together in my brain as well that AI can create a lot of jobs, but also inclusivity is about AI in inclusive and societal applications. And I think that is where for India, this responsible AI, as it's called, is really, really exciting.
Thank you. Radha, if you look back on your journey, you know, what are you most proud of? I can think of hundreds of things that even based on this interaction that, you know, I would be proud of you for. But when you think of your career journey and your life as such, what is it that makes you most proud of it?
Oh my gosh, what a question, Sonu. Who am I most proud of? Good grief. You know, I'll tell you, brings to my mind my mentor and somebody I really looked up to. You know, I got my first job ever. I got my master's and I did engineering in Chennai. I came to the US to do my master's. All by myself. I did not know a single soul in the US. And after that, I joined HP Labs. And at that time, David Packard and Bill Hewlett actually created Silicon Valley, right? And David Packard was still roaming the halls, management by wandering around, if you remember that. And he was the CEO. And I was going through a leadership they put me into a leadership program, and they said, well, you can pick whoever you want to have as your leadership leader mentor. And I think sometimes when you don't know how crazy what you're asking for, and some of our young people are like that, I walked into David Packard's office. It was open offices. And I said, David, you know, I've been asked to do this, and I know you're very busy, but would you be my leadership mentor? And he looked at me and he was like, he's at least a foot taller than me. He stood up and he said, I've never had anybody ask me this. And you just wandered in here and you asked me. It's great. I will be your mentor. And the reason I'm bringing this up is in his last general manager's meeting, David was slurring then, and, you know, he was really slow. It was wonderful. I happened to be sitting next to him at lunch. And he was asked, David was whatever, 80 something, he had retired. He said, David, what's the proudest moment in your illustrious career? And he looked up and he said, proudest moment? You think it's all behind me? I've still mountains to climb in front of me. I'll never forget that. And so when you ask me what are you most proud of? I don't know if I can answer it that way, but I can say this. What I believe in, maybe I'm proud of. I believe in always giving 100% to whatever I'm involved in. And never accepting no for an answer, especially if something has not been done before. That's one of the most exciting things. That I've been done before. Well, let's go do it. And seeing the effect of these efforts on so many young people, I tell you, that is, I don't think it's the proudest moment, but it definitely is at being at that 10th anniversary and seeing all of these people in all these different centers. It was a global, that's what technology does, it was a global celebration in all these countries as well. And it really is just feeling that whatever it is I'm doing, give it your 100%. And I was even asked this, somebody reminded me, I was at the Thai biggest entrepreneurship conference just last week. I was sitting at a table when one lady who is a VC, well-known VC, came up to me and said, you wouldn't remember me, you may not, but in 2004, you gave a talk at her company, it was then Intel. She said that, and we asked you the question about what is the magic of, you know, how do you work and how do you balance work and home? And you said, every morning, every step I take, the balance has to be thought through. And sometimes it's the most important time for my child, and sometimes it's the most important thing for, you know, we're doing something for client. And you have to balance it. And she said, that really stuck with me forever. And I'm sharing that because when I come across young people, she's a very successful VC now, but come across people who you've had a relationship with and you see them blossoming. Oh my gosh, it is the most wonderful feeling. So that's what I would say.
Thanks so much, Radha, for sharing that. Finally, you know, based on your life, your work experience, your social impactful personality and the interactions you've had, what is that one piece of wisdom that you would like to pass on to the next generation of social entrepreneurs?
Oh, Sonu, the questions you ask. That's not what I'm laughing because of this wisdom and proud and things like that. It's kind of not me at all. I think that, let me think of that. Okay, I talked about the giving 100%, never expecting no. And I think I would say to entrepreneurs, the companies of the future, the real companies, the long-term, sustainable, high-growth global companies of the future will combine technology, innovation, and impact. These three will go together in everything we do, whether it is an impact is by impact could be an inclusive workforce. Impact could be societal applications. Impact could be making sure all your technologies are contributing. You know, carbon footprint is you design for zero carbon footprints. It could be a variety of different things. But when you think of technology and VCs and building unicorns, the technology, the innovation, and the societal applications of it. To me, in the future, a unicorn, which, by the way, is not something that I think of unicorns as one-horned animals, but to me, it is about how can you have the most massive impact along with, this is the 2 feet planted firmly on the ground, along with the great business strength and business growth that you bring. So I would say design that, the business success with the societal impact, design that into the beginnings of a company. Then I think all our technologies will be ubiquitous. We will create jobs and we will be very successful, build very successful long-term company. So that would be my...
Thank you, Radha. That was really, really, really great. I love the time together. And for the listeners, I think that was a very impressive, very passionate, super impactful, bold and brave. And I can say that because I'm seeing her, very beautiful Radha Basu. And I'm sure many, many people will be inspired with this conversation. And, you know, as you across your career journey, you've lit many and sparkled many and careers, and many, many women have blossomed under your guidance and inspiration. And I'm at loss of words, you know, what a personality. Thank you so much, Radha, for making the time to be part of this podcast. And I'm sure we'll meet again.
Thank you, Sonu. And I look forward to meeting you in person, not on on technology, and hope to meet you in person sometime soon.
So that's a wrap on yet another episode of EVA India Insights podcast special series celebrating remarkable women. Hope you enjoyed the episode today. Stay tuned for more conversations that inspire. Thank you.